Hey everybody, welcome back to the Memories of Dallas show, part of the Memories Inc. network of shows. This is a show where we talk about all the people, places, and things related to Big D, Dallas, Texas. I'm your host, Chris Daly, and today I have a special treat for you. Executive Director of Memories Inc., Paul Heckman, sits down for an amazing interview with a fascinating lady, Kim Harmon Gatlin. Memories of Dallas is made possible through the generous support of Tooth Acres Pet Care Center. Tooth Acres is located in Carrollton, Texas at 1639 Parker Road. Tooth Acres Pet Care Center provides the finest indoor and outdoor boarding environment for your pet. With over 45 years of experience, the Clem family has created and maintained the highest level of excellence in the pet care industry. And they do it because they're pet owners too. For all your boarding needs, choose Tooth Acres. Tooth Acres offers cat and dog boarding as well as cremation and burial. You can reach them on the phone at 972-492-3711 or go to toothacres.com. And when you go, be sure to thank Lori Clem and the entire staff at Tooth Acres for supporting Memories of Dallas.
My name is Paul Heckman. I'm talking to Kim Harmon Gatlin. Kim is an author, wrote a book that was one of the best sellers out there a couple of few years ago, and also became the executive producer of the Good Christian Bells ABC show. It's really interesting. The book was actually titled Good Christian Bitches, but it was not, ABC decided that wasn't what the name they wanted to run with.
And they ended up going with GCB.
GCB, they sure did. And by the way, before people get too bent out of shape, it's really about, you know, that little group of people that kind of was a stinker bunch at church. You know, we're not all the Christians. So can you tell me a little bit about where you grew up at?
Yeah, I grew up right here in Dallas, and I grew up in the Park Cities and went to Holland Park. I went to higher than the middle school and Holland Park High School. And I lived in Nashville for a while and South Carolina for a while when I was married to Rudy Gatlin, my father. And then when he and I were still married, they had built a theater in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, like they have in Branson, Missouri.
Right.
And we thought it was going to be the perfect place forever because they had 100 golf courses and people had literally nothing to do at night.
Right.
And so, but it turned out they had too much gypsy blood. They didn't like being tethered to one place. So when they decided to go back on the road, we decided that we could get anywhere from DFW. And I'd grown up here and we had family and friends here. So we just decided to come back and, man, put our kids in higher. So they went through the whole system over at Holland Park as well. So,
well, you had a pretty interesting childhood too. I mean, you know, growing up, you had a, who's now a very famous cousin, living with you, Angie Harmon. Yeah.
She's a sweetheart. We're pretty proud of her.
Yeah, I'll bet you are. She's a, you were kind of like a big sister to her, weren't you?
Yeah, she's an only child, and our fathers weren't just brothers, but they were also best friends. And she was raised by her dad, so she was with us a lot. And so she was more like our little sister than our cousin.
And that was Larry? Larry?
Yeah.
Okay.
Larry, father, yeah. And my dad is Gary, and like I said, they weren't just brothers, they were also best friends, so we were all together a lot. And so she's also very close to my younger brother, Paul.
Okay.
And we're more like siblings than cousins.
Right, right, yeah. I know, of course, Larry ran the door for Angus at Soul City. Angus went at Soul City, which is really interesting. So
I remember those days.
he met people like Little Richard, Jerry Lee Lewis, Akintene Turner, Jackie Wilson, Stevie Wonder, Fats Domino, you name it.
What a fun top, right?
and that club is not that big. It's really not. I don't know how they squeezed them in to pay for some of these people.
Well, Angus is a magician when it comes to stuff like that.
He really is. I think at that time he was working with Jack Calmes, that they did the pop festival together, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
What a great guy, and I love Jack's widow, Susie. She's awesome. I worked for her actually at the gazebo when I was like 18 years old. Susie was my boss.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. Mother dragged me out of the creek kicking and screaming because I'd passed my real estate test and she was going to make me come to work for her.
Oh, my
I don't have
goodness.
The real estate.
Yeah, no kidding. When did you meet Rudy?
Actually, it was 1988, and Billy Bob Harris introduced us. And the reason he wanted us to meet is Rudy had just gotten sober, like, oh gosh, I guess about 3 years prior to that. Uh-huh. And we used to laugh and say that I was the senior alcoholic in the family because I had 5 years of sobriety on him. And that was honestly, Billy Bob was like, you need to meet my friend Rudy Atlin. He didn't drink either. And he mentioned it for 3 times, and we were like, you know, and they'd mentioned it to Rudy. Uh-huh. And we finally meet, and when we met, he was actually seeing somebody, and so was I. And we were really good friends for like a year before we started dating, and it was so funny because, you know, back then the guys were white hot and selling out arenas and all that, but he'd call me and say, hey, I just found out I'm going to be in Dallas Thursday night. Do you want to go to dinner? And I'd be like, oh my gosh, I wish you'd have called me an hour ago. I just made plans for Thursday night, but I'll see you next time. And I didn't realize that was just making him more interested, you know?
Temptation.
yeah. About a year after we were really good friends, it was so funny because Billy Bob and I still have to this day, after, you know, 35 years, what we call our daily devotional. You know, we talk every day. And I talked to Billy Bob earlier in the day one day, and I was complaining about everything. My mother was my boss at the time, and I was in the real estate business with her. Yeah. And I was, yeah. Mad at my mother. I was mad at my job. I'd just broken up with my boyfriend. I mean, I was just, you know, just an absolute delight, I'm sure. And about 10 minutes later, Rudy called me. And he's like, how are you doing? I was like, I'm great. How are you? Because, you know, I didn't talk to Rudy every day like I did Billy Bob. So I wasn't going to dump all that on him. But it was so funny because he goes, okay, well, let's start over. As soon as I said, I'm great, how are you? And he goes, okay, well, how about we start over? And I go, oh, you've talked to Billy Bob? And he goes, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
He said, we're working in Vegas this weekend. And he said, I'm going to send you a plane ticket. He said, I want you to come up here and just, you know, you can go to the spa during the day or lay by the pool while I play golf. You can come to the shows at night, or if you don't want to come to the shows at night, you know, either way, that's fine. He goes, I'm in a suite. I'll sleep on the high bed in the living room, and you can have a bedroom and just get away for the weekend. And, I mean, that's literally what we did, you know. And then, like, 3 months later, We just out of the blue, we had one of those awkward conversations when, you know, you realize that, you know, that you're both more interested than just being friends. And
yeah,
we got married and had babies.
Oh my gosh. So he finally made it into the bedroom.
Yeah, he finally actually. It was funny though, because he was a perfect gentleman, and I'm not kidding. He's a great guy. I'm very, very fortunate that's who is the father of my children. Because you wouldn't believe some of my single friends that I hear the nightmare stories, you know, about the kind of women that, you know, their ex-husbands bring around their children, and, you know, just, you know, or just stuff like, you know, every time the kids go to visit a weekend, you know, there's a different woman waking up on Saturday morning in the house, and they're kind of like, who's this? I didn't run into any of that with Rudy, thank goodness.
Oh, gosh. By the way, I don't know if we mentioned it, but we're talking about Rudy Gatlin of the Gatlin Brothers. So, just in case people are wondering who the heck Rudy is. Oh, my gosh. When did you get a divorce?
Oh, gosh. 2006, 2007? Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2006. Because that's what prompted me to write my book. You know, Rudy and I had done, we felt like we had done so many good works in the community, and my parents had always been very active socially and done, you know, my mom had chaired a bunch of stuff and been real involved in different organizations, and I kind of like, we would be exempt to some of the nonsense that I'd seen when couples went through a divorce. And you know, I have to admit, we did collaborative law. I mean, Rudy and I could not have been more grown up about the way we handled our divorce. Uh-huh. And, you know, I didn't want people thinking poorly of my children's husband. Children's father. He didn't want people thinking poorly of their mother. So there was no blood on the sidewalk. We weren't, right. You know, we weren't about, you know, why we got a divorce. People just, and they were shocked because we didn't talk about stuff, you know. Uh-huh. And it was really funny because as soon as, I guess because there was no information to be had, people just made it up, you know.
Oh, gosh.
And it was really funny because because I would have expected, like, a certain group of women that I expected to have had the most support from and be the most understanding and encouraging were the ones who were at the root of making up the nastiest stuff, you know?
The good Christian bells.
Exactly. Well, it's funny because I was talking to a girlfriend of mine on the phone one day. She said, you know, I'm just really floored at the behavior of some of these good Christian women. And I got good Christian bitches, and we both just died laughing. And I'm going to have to write a book and call it Good Christian Bitches.
Oh,
and then I did
gosh. One of those
that says they're going to write a book and never die. You know, so I did write the book.
Yeah. Okay, so the book comes out, and Hell Follows on a White Horse, you know.
It depends on who you ask about that. I don't feel like Hell Falls on a White Horse. I think it was awful. Well, it was funny because it was one of those things that I thought, you know, my mother and, you know, probably 24 of my friends, you know, would read it.
Right.
And it was just funny because, you know, anytime any media people reached out to me to either talk to Rudy or to talk to Angie, you know, I was always very polite. I always felt like, you know, if it was something that was absurd, you know, it'd be one thing for me to say no for them.
Right.
But I just felt if it wasn't absolutely, you know, preposterous, that it wasn't really my place to say no for them. And so, you know, I'd always, you know, at least relay the message from somebody who was trying to reach them for an interview or whatever. And it really paid off for me when I wrote my book, because then they all reached out to me saying, you know, hey, I want to do a piece on you in whatever publication, you know, about your book. And one of the girls was a local reporter in Dallas. She also wrote for Newsweek.
Okay.
She freelanced Newsweek. And at the time, I don't know if he still has this position or not, but at the time, the editor of Newsweek was a Highland Park guy.
Oh, boy.
And she asked her editor, she said, do you care if I write about her? And he said, well, we don't do book reviews, but you can put her in Periscope. And that's like page 4 of Newsweek. It's like a Q&A thing.
Okay.
That particular issue, and I always need to remember who this artist is, and I can't remember his name ever. But one who did the famous portrait of Obama that had the pale blue, the bright red, and the dark blue.
Yeah.
That iconic portrait, that was the cover of Newsweek, and it was right before the election, and so it was almost like a commemorative issue, and I've always felt like so many people picked up that particular issue of Newsweek than they would have normally in a million years, you know, but that was the one that I was in, so that's when I started getting all those phone calls from the West Coast for people wanting to talk to me about making my book into a TV show or a movie.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Isn't it crazy? Now, it did get picked up. And it did get made into a series. I know, because I worked on the pilot.
You told me that. I love that. Isn't that great?
Yeah. I, of course, that's when I also broke my back on and had to appear at Munger Methodist Church. So.
Wait, you broke your back on my show?
Yes.
Oh, Paul, I didn't know that.
You didn't know that.
You did?
Yeah. We were shooting up there at the church, and this was before I'd been reformatted up there, and I went right down, hit the wall, and right down into the concrete. It was not good. So that.
I am so sorry. I had no idea.
It's all your fault.
It is all my fault. I feel terrible.
Kim, push me.
Oh, my God. You know what's so funny is nobody ever told me that somebody broke their back on our set.
Oh, man. It 7 back operations later.
Oh, Paul, I am so sorry. That horrifies me. I am so sorry. I did not know.
It's okay. It could have happened on any show. You know, it's just the way it goes sometimes. You know.
Oh, but I feel terrible. I hate it that it was mine. Wow.
Well,
are you doing okay now?
I'm sorry?
I said, are you doing okay with your back now?
Yeah, as good as it could be expected, really. Really on there. So, but anyway, let's talk about the show. ABC ran it for about 10 episodes in 2012. Now, the pilot was shot here, but then, of course, they moved it to Los Angeles. And I know before you told me that wasn't your choice, right?
Oh, no, it wasn't my choice at all. But, you know, our cast was so big, and it was one of those things where, you know, I've got such a heart for people who have to work away from home, you know, because And that's what my children's father did for, you know, 250 days a year, you know. Uh-huh. And I thought, you know what, if it enables them, if it keeps everybody happier and keeps, you know, everybody, you know, in a better place so that they're able to do better work. I mean, you know, uh-huh. it was the way I looked at it. I didn't mind because I felt like, you know, there was purpose in it because obviously I was the only person from Dallas and, you know how many people worked on that show.
Well, Kristen is from pretty close to here, isn't she? Oklahoma?
She's Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Yeah. Yes, she is. Yeah.
That's, and she's got a little twang in her voice.
Yeah, she does. She can sure pull it if she needs to, that's for sure.
We understand her. But, yeah, it's a really cool cast. Annie Potts, Christian Chenoweth, and my old buddy Mark Declan, who I knew from Lone Star and a couple other shows. Seems like he was turning up everywhere.
Well, and Annie, you know, I'd never met Annie before the show, and she was every bit as fabulous as I'd hoped she'd be, you know. And of course, so was Kristen, and then Kristen and Jennifer Aspen, who played Sharon Peachum on the show.
Sure.
She Party of Five, and she'd been in a bunch of stuff. But anyway, she's a beautiful girl, super sweet, and she and Kristen became, you know, like best friends from meeting on the show, and they actually now have a production company together. So lots of good things happened from that meeting, even though our show didn't make it more than 10 episodes.
Do you think it's going to get picked up again or anything?
You know, the CW made an announcement a few years ago that they were going to do something with it, but they were going to cast it younger, which I was so grateful for. I mean, the fact that people still had an interest in it, you know, sure. I loved the fact that they still wanted to see something happen with it, but couldn't help but think, because they skew so much younger, you know, like high school age kids and stuff.
Oh, wow.
I remember thinking, gosh, you're leaving so much material on the table, you know, yeah, because yeah. girls that age haven't, you know, lived long enough to experience, you know, some of the things that GCB about, you know, your expectations of people and, you know, disappointment and, you know, when you know sure. the right choice to make and you just don't make it because you're human and there's days that you're just not going to make it.
So the whole premise of the book was a divorce, a gal comes back to town. You know,
exactly.
And how could you do that with high school kids?
You yeah, know, I mean, well, I think they really struggled with it because they did a couple of scripts that that the network, I mean, like, I didn't even see the scripts that were written until they were passed on.
Uh-huh.
And they were writers. I mean, it wasn't the writers. I just think it's really hard to fold concept into that age group to the degree that you'd need to do it to have a series, you know. Uh-huh. But anyway, there's something going on that I can't say too much about yet.
Interesting.
But it's very exciting. I mean, the CW hasn't made a formal announcement of any kind of what they are or are not going to do with it, so it's not really my anything, but there's it's not dead yet, as they say. There's still stuff in the works, and I just love the fact that people have such a heart for it, and that creative people, you know, still want to continue to do things with it. You know,
is this Annie Potts still going to be involved with it, or Kristen?
That's the plan. That's the plan. Yeah,
be so good.
I love those two.
You can tell.
Yeah, we had such a great following and such a great fan base, and that was the big pushback that we got from the CW doing it and wanting to do it younger was everybody loved that original cast so much.
Sure.
You know, we talked about incorporating them in terms of, you know, moms or aunts or bosses or next door neighbors or, you know, that kind of thing. Because everybody, that original cast was just so loved by so many.
Sure.
So I think everybody's going to be happy about that.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Of course, the lead actress, now she's gone on to take another series.
Leslie Bibb.
My name is Paul Heckman. I am the Executive Director of Memories Incorporated, an IRS-approved 501c3 nonprofit. A few years ago, we saw a niche for Facebook pages free of politics and created our first page, Memories of Dallas, which is now well over 30,000 members strong. We have expanded our Facebook pages to include Memories of Texas, Memories of Texas Football, and Memories of Texas Music. We also have actual web pages for memoriesofdallas.org, memoriesoftexas.org, memoriesoftexasfootball.org, and meminc.org, our mothership. We are working on additional web pages now. Please come see us.
Are you looking for a podcast network that talks Texas by Texans? Well, check us out. You're already listening to us, but go to the website, LoneStarPodcast.com. You can also find us on every big podcast platform, LSPN. We have shows in business, entertainment, marketing, music, of course, sports. We have some of the best sports podcasts in the state of Texas, ranging from high school football all the way up to pro basketball. So check us out online, LoneStarPodcast.com. That's the LSPN on every major podcast platform.
Of course, the lead actress, now she's gone on to take another series.
Leslie Bibb?
Yes, Leslie Bibb. Yeah, she's gone. You can't get her. She's a she's a superhero.
Wish her well.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Okay. Now, let me ask you this. Okay. All these gals that are in your book, which one are you?
You know what's funny? I'm not. And I went, I guess you could say I'm all, a little bit of me is in all of them. But yeah, that was the funny thing about that a lot of people didn't get, the people who were, especially the ones that were hypercritical of it, is realized that my main lesson in writing GCB is I had to look at my own heart. You know, I had to look at how many times somebody looked at me and thought, wow, if that's what being a Christian looks like, I don't want anything to do with it, you know?
Oh, no.
And that was the best part of it. You know, I was having to, you know, kind of take my own inventory, so to speak.
Sure.
But it was really funny because I went out of my way. You know, Rudy was so upset when I first wrote it because he thought, well, everybody's going to think I cheated on you. And I was like, Rudy, you know, everybody knows that this isn't me. And then, you know, of course, I'd gone out of my way to make the Elizabeth, the mother character, the mother of the main character, Amanda, so different from my own mother, right. So that people wouldn't think it was me, you know. Yeah. And, you know, my mother is a perfect lady. She wouldn't say shit if she had a mouthful, you know. She hasn't had a cigarette since she was a teenager, you know, and she can't break 100 on the golf course. So I made sure that I made Elizabeth the chain smoking ace golfer, you know.
Right.
And people still thought, you know, the main character was me. And but it was funny because in the show, Annie played my mother so beautifully because by then Darren had met my mother and just fell with her. I mean, just adored my mom. And so he made Annie's character more like my actual mother than the character in the book.
Aww.
You know? Yeah. So it was sweet. Yeah. But a lot of people think it's me, and people who know me know it's not.
Yeah.
But I was real careful to try and make each character a blend of, like, you know, two or three or sometimes four or five different people.
Right.
And
right.
They'd be reading along and think, you know, oh, gosh, I know exactly who this is. And all of a sudden it'd say, and she has huge boobs. And they'd be like, oh, well, that's not her then. Because I just thought I wasn't any better than they were if I handed somebody their head.
Yeah.
You know, so I had to be real careful. And believe me, it was tempting because there were a few times that I'd have to put it down and walk away from it for a week or two while I got over being mad about something.
Yeah. You know?
It was super tempting.
Oh, my gosh. Well, listen, you got, two kids, right?
I do. I have a son, Austin, who just turned 30 last March, and bless his heart. I mean, you know, we obviously wanted to do something so special for him for his 30th birthday, and it was during the pandemic. So let's do that. And then Lauren is 25.
Okay. All right.
Full grown.
Now, she's the one who just arrived in the from the airport, right?
Yes. She's the one that just got engaged and getting married next.
Tell her congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Austin's 30, and I remind him all the time that his father was 37 when he and I got married, so he doesn't need to be in any rush.
Yeah, we used to think that, well, we have to be married by the time we're like 23 or something like that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Not anymore. Oh, right. Man. So I think the last time we talked, your daughter was studying for the MCAT.
You know what? She was, and she had gone to work for a friend of mine, actually, that owns a company called Perch Event Decor. And she loves that business so much. It's just really kind of funny, and she's a real natural at it. I mean, she just has a real good eye, and she has the right temperament, you know, for dealing with, you know, people who it's their wedding day, so they're a little, you know, frazzled or stressed or whatever.
Sure.
Anyway, she put those plans away, and she is all in the event business. She absolutely adores it. And my son works for a friend of mine that owns a big hotel company, and he's in sales and has several hotels under him and just loves it. So I'm so grateful and so fortunate that they both really found something they both love to do already, you know?
Oh.
Yeah. I know. Nobody's been to jail. Nobody's been to rehab. I mean, I told Reedy we did something right.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Now, you were, didn't you go to a Catholic boarding school at some time?
I did. I went to an all-girls Catholic boarding school that was actually in Oak Cliff called Mount St. Michael. And my mom was a single mom, and I had a younger brother, and my mom owned her own business. And I, the way my mom describes it is I woke up one day when I was like 12 and was mad, and I stayed mad until I got sober, which is actually a pretty fair assessment of the whole deal. And it became, you know, it was really funny because I would, you know, back then, like today, you know, even at Highland Park, I mean, Lauren and her friends would go to school with no makeup, their hair in a ponytail, you know, wearing a t-shirt that, you know, came down past their shorts half the time, so it didn't even look like they had anything on underneath it, and tennis shoes. Well, I mean, back in the day, you know, we got up at 6 o'clock in the morning and washed our hair and put on full makeup and the cutest outfit we had every day when we went to school, you know? And I would literally go to school and I would walk to the door and I would have my hand on the door handle, and somebody would walk out and go skip first period with me, and I'd go, okay, and I'd walk off, and then I'd be coming back in for second period, and somebody would come out and go skip second period with me, and I'd go, okay, and I'd literally be at school all day and I'd never go to class, you know? And so finally, you know, we realized that I wasn't going to pass. I was going to fail miserably if I just didn't get someplace that had a more structured, stricter environment, and boy, she sure found it.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, so I graduated from there.
You graduated early too, didn't you?
I did. I was 16, and I was actually 16 and 3 months old when I graduated from high school.
Wow.
And the reason I graduated in May of 77, and the reason that I remember all that so well is because you had to have a certain number of credits to graduate. It was like 20 credits to graduate, and there were several girls that were my age that thought they were going to graduate in May, and they ended up saying at the last minute, oh, well, no, you only get a half a credit for this class you took instead of a full credit, so you have to stay for summer school, because I really didn't like people graduating that young. And so I made sure I had 22 credits when I graduated in May, so they couldn't make me stay that summer.
Wow.
Well, it was literally one of those deals where they said you can work at your own pace, and they said, you know, you can graduate or you can turn 18, whichever happens first. And I was like, where do I go to study? You know, so I got out of there in 2 years.
So you get out of school and you go to work for your mom.
I did.
Was that she doing a real estate back then?
Yeah, well, you know how it is when, you know, especially when you're a kid and you're trying to work for your family, and it's, you know, but I mean, I took some time away from time to time. Like I, you know, the spell I told you about where I worked for Susie Calmes at Gazebo for a while. Sure. And then one Christmas, I wasn't working for mom. She and I weren't getting along, and she was like, you know, you need to get a job for, because Christmas coming up, you know? And so my friend, Lewis Cobble, owned Cutter Bill at the time, and I called Lewis, and I said, can I come to work for you for the, you know, during the holidays? And he was like, sure. Well, it was like the funnest job I ever had in my life, and so after Christmas was over, they asked me if I wanted to stay and not just be Christmas help, you know? So I did, and I worked there for like another year, and that's, I'm not kidding, that's literally what ended me in rehab.
Oh my gosh.
I know. So once I got out of rehab, I went back to work for my mother.
So tell me about the connection with Mickey Mantle.
You know what? It's so funny because my mother was so relieved. I graduated from high school, which, you know, nobody could really predict, you know, before because of my habits. Oh. And I'd gotten out of school in May, and that October, I met Danny Mantle, Mickey's youngest son, through a mutual friend.
Okay.
And we started dating, and I just, you know, my parents weren't big drinkers when I was a kid, you know, and I just thought, well, my parents didn't know how to have fun. I didn't realize what was really going on, you know.
Sure.
And Danny and I dated for a few. We're still very good friends. As a matter of fact, David, his older brother, has taken me and a girlfriend to their Mickey Mantle Steakhouse up at the casino. Is it Windstar or Choctaw? I can't remember. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're going up there this coming week. But Danny is actually Austin, my oldest. He's his godfather. And the funny thing is Mickey and Rudy were really good friends and used to play in golf tournaments together and stuff. So after Rudy and I got married, I've got some great pictures, actually, of Mickey and Austin when he's like 2 years old, and Rudy and Danny on the golf course together, and just, you know, sweet stuff like that.
So you mentioned going to rehab. When you were, 19?
I was 19.
And so you've been clean and sober for four decades, haven't you?
That makes me sound really old, doesn't it? Yeah, June 24th, 1980 is my sobriety date.
Oh, that's amazing. I'm at 31 and counting.
Oh, see?
Yeah.
We're a rare breed, aren't we? And then some.
You know, the strangest thing is when somebody, like, hands you, when you first start, you know, when somebody hands you a beer, you know, you normally just reach out and grab it. You don't think about alcohol or anything like that. You just take it, open, pop it, and go, oh, wait a minute, here you take it.
Actually, I treated it like somebody was trying to hand me kryptonite, because fortunately I was young enough.
Uh-huh.
I was young enough to be compliant, mm-hmm. and I was old enough to understand that I really didn't want to be that person, you know?
Yeah.
So I was, and it's so funny because, like, so many of my friends, like David and Danny Mantle, of course, are, you know, one of a handful of people that knew me when I drank.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the people that I know didn't know me. I mean, besides my family, you know, didn't know me when I drank, and they just say all the time, I just can't imagine. I'm like, trust me, you don't want to, you know. And over the years, I've had some people say to me, you know, are you sure you're an alcoholic, or were you just a teenage stunt drinker? And I'm like, well, why don't I come live with you for a couple of weeks and we'll find out? And they're like, never mind. But I didn't know about that. I didn't know we had that in common. That's interesting.
Yeah. 31 and counting, and I got some friends that are right in that area too. So it's really interesting. Really.
Now, did you go to rehab or just start going to meetings?
I went to rehab.
Oh, where'd you go?
I went to Sierra Tucson.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Out in Tucson, Arizona, and then I spent 3 months in a halfway house in Prescott. So.
Oh, wow.
Everybody has different paths, and, you know, I would love, if there had been some jobs available in Prescott or in that area, I probably would have stayed up there because it's gorgeous up there.
Yeah, everybody I know that's spent any time there just loves it.
Yeah, it's just there's no jobs. So it's like, well, this isn't going to work.
Well, especially not with what you were doing at the time, you know?
Yeah. So anyway, I came back to Dallas and moved in with a friend of mine that was had been clean for a couple of years, and so that it worked out pretty good. We went to a lot of meetings and, you know, stuff like that. I know you went to the pawn shop in Whiskey River and places.
All those places when I'm underage.
Well, you were kind of you said you looked like you're a little older.
Yeah, I looked like I was 25 when I was, you know, 15.
And you still look like you're 25.
Oh, aren't you sweet? I wish. That's okay, though. It beats the alternative, right?
Yeah.
I'd rather be old than dead.
So, Didn't you start getting into real estate again?
You know what I got? It was so confusing because when I was doing press for GCB, some people put that I was in commercial real estate, and actually, I was in the real estate title business. I was fortunate in the sense that most of my clients were just whales. I mean, they were guys who did these monster real estate deals.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so I did really well at the commercial real estate thing. Just and it was marketing basically. You know, I was building new business, and loved it and did great. But then my book took off, and I couldn't. It was hard to do that and be all the other places that I needed to be doing all the other things I needed to be doing, mm-hmm. and have a full time job. So it was just easier to leave that. But and then I've been working on so many other things since all the opportunities that opened for me with GCB. Like I think I told you, we just finished a show for Discovery Plus.
Okay.
And it's basically it's we did it with the CIA, and the premise is basically, here's what you think you know and here's what actually happened.
Okay.
And it's really funny because the first episode, we don't have an air date yet, and I keep telling everybody, calm down, because once we get an air date, it's going to change times, before we find out what it actually is. Mm-hmm. But the very first episode is a 2-hour special, and it's about UFOs. And if you'd have told me 2 years ago that I'd believe in UFOs and that I'd be doing a show about UFOs, I would tell you that you had me confused with someone else. But it's very interesting and very fascinating. You know, most people don't know this, but after 50 years, anything that was classified top secret,
right,
unless it's determined to be a detriment to the public at the time,
yeah,
they have to release that information into the public. But they do it in like 87,000 pages.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, not the most patient person in the world, who's the biggest Evelyn Woodhead speed reader, isn't going to go look for it, but that's what was so great about doing it in conjunction with them, is there's certain keywords that you can search on these particular stories that'll get you to the information that you really want,
sure,
and help you find it more quickly. And so that's what we're doing now. And actually, Rich Emberlin, who he was on Dallas SWAT. He was a Dallas police officer for 32 years, but he was on that show, Dallas SWAT, for years. And he was married to Leanne Locken, or is married, sorry, to Leanne Locken from the Dallas Housewives, and he's our host for the show.
Okay.
From what I understand, I think it's coming out in January.
Well, that's going to be good then. So how many episodes have you done?
Well, we've only done the 2-hour special, but we were told that there was some material withheld from the shoots that they were going to use in the first couple of episodes, but we haven't gotten official green light yet, because you know how that works. So
Sure.
But we're optimistic that it's going to do
so
very well.
So what else is going on in your life?
I'm ghostwriting a book for a guy that may be like the most interesting project I've ever done. And I have to be sketchy with details, but he's the son of one of the major Colombian cartels.
Oh boy.
And actually, he did. He turned his life around. He became a Christian. He got sober. He is consulting with us on it's kind of like a counter answer to Narcos.
Okay.
Because the guy who was the consultant on Narcos was the head of their security.
Wow.
And he's so funny. He's got a very thick accent, and he's like, see those bushes over there? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, that's where that guy was. I was in the office building having the meetings.
No.
So, yeah.
Oh, boy, I bet he has some stories.
You wouldn't believe it,
and
Paul.
He has some other stories that'll never get told.
Well, actually, that's what's so cool about it, is he's telling everything. I mean, he's not like snitching people out or whatever, but he's telling everything, because his message is, don't be like me. I know this looks really glamorous and awesome, but I want you to know the whole story. Everybody stops that story, where it still looks glamorous and all that. Because he said that he said he was never addicted to drugs, but his big addiction was power, And he said that was his, his big thing.
Yeah.
And his father and his uncle are still serving time in federal prison in the U.S., and he got out a few years ago. And he has started the coolest program. They go into at-risk neighborhoods that he will basically tell you himself that they were, like, personally responsible for ruining because of all the drugs they ran through there.
Right.
And they're doing outreach programs with people that have a family member in prison, because he talks about how adversely it affects the entire family.
Yeah.
You know, to have somebody in prison, and they work with those families, and they start working with them 18 months before they're released.
Wow.
Because he said one thing that, the system kind of overlooks is that so many of those guys who get into big trouble, they're really entrepreneurs. They just put their efforts in the wrong area, you know?
Sure.
And so he works with them on how to be a businessman, how to be a legitimate businessman, how to be an entrepreneur, how to, you know, how to make a difference in their community and you know, live a life that leaves an impact and a mark in a good way versus the way that, you know, he and his family did.
Right.
So he's on the redemption road, and it's really cool to watch.
Well, are you and Rudy pretty good friends these days?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, we get along great. Matter of fact, it's so funny because his father passed away, unfortunately, during COVID.
Oh, yeah.
He was 93, but I adored his daddy.
Uh-huh.
And now that the kids are at the age where they're getting married and starting to have their own families and stuff, he mentioned recently that he's probably going to be moving back to Dallas pretty soon.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, part of the reason he was back in Nashville was helping, you know, take care of his mom and dad, you know.
Well, he's from a small town, isn't he?
He was born in Alney, but he grew up in Odessa.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's what I remember. But and then his brother was born in another small town, if I remember correctly.
Seminole. Larry was born in Seminole.
Yeah, that's right.
Say Steve was born in Alney also.
Okay. How many brothers were there?
Three. There's Larry, Steve, and Rudy, and they have a younger sister who's actually lived in Frisco for the last 30 years, named LaDonna. Isn't that funny?
Isn't that crazy?
I know it.
Well, listen, I love talking to you, Kim. Thank you so much for taking time and a little conversation with the people from Memories of Dallas and Memories Incorporated. We love you.
Listen, I love what you guys do, and it's such a blessing, and it's so interesting too, and especially somebody who grew up here, you know, my whole life. I just love seeing so many of the things that people post and talk about, and I know that's so much work for y'all, and I just can't tell you how much so many people appreciate everything you guys put into it.
Well,
so
thank you.
Hey, I want to thank Paul Heckman for sharing that meeting he had. As always, we have to thank our sponsors, Tooth Acres Pet Care Center. For all your boarding needs, choose Tooth Acres, because Tooth Acres cares. Hey, and I also want to thank you, the listener, for giving us your time and attention. Share these shows out on all your social media and help us preserve Memories of Dallas. Until next time, I'm your host, Chris Daly, reminding you that the best thing about memories is making them. So go out and make some memories.